A word from today's sponsor. Embodia is an all-in-one platform for rehab professionals and our patients. I love using Embodia because it includes a complete practice management for charting, scheduling, billing, and online booking. Plus, Embodia has digital exercise prescription, program monitoring, secure two-way messaging, waitlist management, in-depth reporting, and so much more. As an added bonus, there's a library of continuing education courses and regular live webinars so that you can continue to learn while you build your practice. Visit EmbodiaApp.com and use the code MOMSTRENGTH to get $20 off your first month's Tier 3 membership. Welcome to Mom Strength, a podcast and movement to empower, educate, and showcase mom strength inside and out. I'm your host, Surabhi Veach, physiotherapist and fitness coach, also known as the Passionate Physio. Join me for discussions on movement, mindset, and motherhood, where we raise the bar and challenge the status quo. Get ready for expert interviews and real, honest conversations where we explore physical, mental, and emotional health. Let's celebrate the beautiful diversity and common experiences in all of our journeys. Let's do this. Hey, y'all, and welcome back to another episode of Mom Strength. I'm your host, Surabhi Veach, and I'm here with the vagina coach today, Kim Bopney. I'm so excited to chat with Kim. If you don't know who Kim is, she's the vagina coach. She's a certified fitness professional, a published author, a women's health educator, and advocate. She's the founder of Pelvien Wellness, Inc., a company offering pelvic health programs and coaching for women in pregnancy, motherhood, and menopause. Hi, Kim.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. I actually met Kim in person in the fall at an event for incontinence. How cool is it that they are hosting events for things like incontinence now? We're able to publicly talk about it. There's no shame. And we have everyone from healthcare professionals, fitness professionals, to influencers attending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great. It was it's a pad company, which I certainly don't promote pads, but it was enlightening and refreshing to see a pad company who technically wants to keep us wearing pads for the rest of our lives, but they were bringing light to the conversation around bladder health and pelvic health and what causes incontinence, and brought together a really great panel and amazing, as you say, practitioners and influencers for a really lovely event, and really helped increase awareness. So super grateful that that stuff's starting to happen now.
Exactly. So I would love to hear from you, your journey into how you got into coaching this specific population, which mm-hmm. is like pretty common. Half the world is, mm-hmm. people with mm-hmm. uteruses. So it makes sense. But I would love to hear how you got into it and what your journey has been.
Yeah, I certainly didn't grow up thinking that I would work in this space. I think from a fairly young, like probably around my teens, I always had a passion for health and fitness. So I think I knew that I would end up somehow in the health and fitness space. But grade six, I remember seeing a childbirth video as part of our sex ed. And I thought, no, I don't want to do that. And so I grew up thinking, I'm not having babies. And that was it. I remember even having a sticker album that I had, little sayings posted in. And one of them was, I will not have a baby.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So I think that's funny. Anyway, that was kind of the start of it. But that video planted this fear, but also fascination. I went home and I looked at my mom differently. And I looked at all the women in my life and I thought, well, they've done it. And then as I got older, I started to notice my mom would stop running and she complained of back pain, and she eventually had surgery for incontinence. She had a hysterectomy. And so all of these things I was witnessing when I had a little bit more awareness as I was older. And that was sort of at the time affirming, like, okay, no, I definitely don't want to have children. I really like the way my body works now. And I want to continue to do all these things that I love. I met my husband and watched my sister-in-law give birth. And that was a bit kind of like the TSN turning point, where I saw birth differently than anything that I had ever seen it portrayed as in the media. And she was using midwives. She was in a side lying birth position. I remember the next day asking her about, is everything falling out? Because she allowed us to be in the room when she was giving birth. So I saw how, I saw the whole process. It was amazing. And she said, no, I have a little bit of soreness and tender, but everything feels kind of normal. And I thought, all right. And then so the next year I was pregnant, decided I did want to start a family. And then I was now determined I'm going to have a different story than my mom and other women that I know had challenges. And I was using midwives and I was asking them, how can I prevent tearing? How can I prevent these challenges that my mom experienced? And they said, well, we've heard of this thing, there's perineal massage, and we've also heard that of this product called the Epino. And so I researched this product and it made sense to me. It's a kind of fitness principles, stretching, strengthening, biofeedback, preparing the body for a physical event. And I purchased one, I had a great experience. And then I thought, well, why is not every single person who's giving birth using one of these? And I contacted the company, they're from Germany. And I said, could I be a distributor in Canada? And my intention was not for it to be a business per se. I thought, a little extra side pocket money, I'll sell it to friends and through my midwives. That was the intent. And it was very much a side thing for a few years. I used it again with my second baby. And then after my second child was born, we moved to Ontario. So we were in Vancouver. We are in Vancouver now. And we moved to Ontario for my husband's work. And just let me back up. I had no tearing. And that was in my mind, okay, if I haven't torn, then I'm not going to have incontinence like my mom. So this was my knowledge at the time, right? Yeah. I associated tearing and episiotomy with other problems. And I thought, okay, if I can just prevent that, then I'll be fine. So we moved to Ontario for my husband's work. I'm working full-time in HR, have this little Epino thing on the side, two kids in daycare. My husband's a pilot. He's away all the time. We have no family. So I'm thinking, you know what? I wonder if I could do something with this little Epino thing so that I could be home with my kids. And I said, I'll give myself a year to grow it. And then 3 months later, I was laid off. The whole financial downturn of 2009.
Yeah.
I was laid off. I was like, okay, here we go. I had already started a website, so I wasn't starting from complete scratch. But then I was like, all right, let me see if there's other pelvic health products. And then I started to get pelvic health physios referring to me. I'd never heard of pelvic floor physio. So I learned what they did. And then again, I was screaming from the rooftops, just like I was about the Epino. This is important and we should all be doing this and should be treating it like we do the dentist, go once a year. And so that kind of became my mission. And it was very much trying to prevent, because so many pregnancy and birth is such a pivotal time and where so many of these challenges begin. So if we could get this information to women ahead of time, could we help mitigate some of this risk? That was my intention. I created a program called Prepare to Push, primarily focusing on pregnancy. Then I was recognizing, and I had lived in Southeast Asia, that we do postpartum recovery very different. And I myself was also like, okay, baby's out, I'm good. I would just want to get back to the gym. I want to go running again. I want to do all these things. And no respect or honor given to the need to recover. And so as I was learning more about pelvic floor, starting to see a link with diastasis recti, I reached out to this woman who was in the United States and was teaching a program about diastasis. And I went down and took her course and thought, okay, I'm going to bring back her program. It was Julie Tupler, the Tupler technique. So I thought, okay, I'll bring this back to Canada. And so I went and took this course. And then another person who I then randomly met on the, not randomly, I was looking for people doing the same work. And I met another woman named Samantha Mombati Nguyen, who I know you know.
Yes.
And two of us got together and we said, huh, what are you doing for this? And are you doing pelvic floor? And so she went and took this same Tupler training. And the two of us were going to bring this back. And so we were incorporating the techniques. We were selling some of Julie's products. And we then started to get a physiotherapist referring patients to us. And we couldn't find this random physiotherapist named Julia DiPaolo. And anyway, so we carried on, but we were noticing little things we thought we would do differently had it been our own. And one day we met this physiotherapist, the three of us sat down and said, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing? And we compared stories and ended up starting a business. So we started a business together called Bellies Inc. And we wanted to optimize postpartum recovery, bring pelvic floor recovery exercise into that kind of period of time. And we also recognized the techniques of belly wrapping or belly binding that many cultures do in the world, but we wanted to make it a bit more mainstream. So we designed our own product. So that was another whole journey. And
Bellies Inc., that wrap is designed by you guys?
Yeah.
I just put that together right now.
Oh, okay. Well, now you know. Yep. So it's now it's sold. Another woman, an amazing friend and doula out here in BC now owns and runs the company and has expanded it through there. But yes, that was Samantha, Julie, and I designed that product. And And we loved it. But we also, none of us loved manufacturing. None of us loved managing that aspect of the business. And we all had our own independent businesses as well. So it was a lot. And we all had children. And then we started to go through perimenopause. And so it was a lot. And so we passed the reins and went back to our own individual businesses. And now, funnily enough, both Samantha and I focus more so on that perimenopause, menopause phase of life as opposed to prenatal postpartum. And Julia has actually moved to the States, and she's still, I think she's working on getting her license now to be able to practice again as a pelvic floor physical therapist. And so to wrap up the story, that was sort of the journey that then we sold Belly's Inc. And I, the Epino, the Health Canada put in new regulations, new medical device regulation process that was way more costly, way more hoops to jump through. So the manufacturer of the Epino said, no, we're not going to go through that. They pulled out of Canada. And with that decision, I fought that hard. And with that decision, it was beyond my control. And so I ended up shutting down my e-commerce store and focusing on getting all of my stuff online so that I could help more people. Because I had people saying, I live in Australia and I live here, and they obviously couldn't come and see me in person. So I wanted to get more kind of workshops, and then did some coaching and brought my programs online and then developed an app. And that's kind of where I'm at now. And again, the majority of the people that I serve are more perimenopause, menopause, the odd people, the odd few people who are kind of early postpartum, but that's,
I guess now with people having babies later, there's just more overlap between where postpartum ends and perimenopause starts.
Yep. 100%.
And I love this story because I think a lot of people who might listen to this episode are fellow healthcare professionals, PTs, fit pros. And, you know, you've had such a successful journey through kind of various, you know, from the Epino to Belly's Inc. to Pelvian Wellness. Like, so there's, I think what I'm getting at is it, you didn't just start off right away knowing what you wanted to do. You started with what felt in that moment. And then that evolved to the next thing that worked in the moment. And that evolved again.
1,000%. No, it, like, I am the definite supporter of the entrepreneur journey is very up and down and all over the map and squiggly lines everywhere. We had no idea what we were doing. I had no idea what I was doing. I just thought, oh, I'll just sell a little product on the side and, oh, we'll manufacture this little product. Like, it was so much more than we thought. And it's been, there's many times I've been wanting to just, no, I can't do this anymore. I'm done, but I'm glad I've stuck through it. I absolutely love and adore what I do. But no, we had no idea what we're doing. And it's all been a very, looking back, it all makes sense. It was this natural organic path, but at the time it felt like, oh my God, we had to learn something new every time. But that was a key piece of the pelvic health component, was started out in pregnancy, wanting to prevent, then recognizing a void in postpartum recovery, then started my own perimenopause, menopause journey and said, this is not a do your Kegels in pregnancy and you're fine. This is a whole life journey that we go through that we have to consider the influences and impacts to our pelvic health, but nobody is talking about that.
No. And even what you said, like, if I got the help in pregnancy, if I use the Epino, I could prevent tears and then not end up like my mom with incontinence or, you know, a hysterectomy or whatnot. But a lot of people have incontinence and they've never had children. And a lot of people get hysterectomies. And, you know, so sometimes we think if we do this, that will prevent X, Y, Z. But the reality is we're all aging and these changes may happen with or without, you know, our approval. So getting support for wherever we are at is important, even if, you know, we could have prevented this. Sometimes we just don't know what we are going to experience until the time comes. Yeah. So I love that. Perimenopause and menopause, I think, are a natural progression because you're also getting to that stage of life and you're seeing that, hey, there are women my age who have no clue what's going on in their bodies. And I see it as well. Tell me a little bit about one of the things you mentioned was how similar postpartum is to post-op hysterectomy. So hysterectomy, how common are they? Do you know, I don't know the stats around that. Are they pretty common?
Super common. In the States, it's about 600,000. In Canada, it's about half that. So about 300,000. And the majority of those are for benign conditions. So there are some times where this is not a choice. It could be cancer related.
Tumor.
There are definitely those reasons. However, many of people are having them for heavy bleeding during perimenopause and no investigation to root cause. Many people have them for fibroids. Many people have it for pelvic organ prolapse. And the frustrating part about that is
super frustrating.
They have this surgery thinking, okay, great. And it does remove symptoms from your uterus prolapse, of course. However, the act of having a hysterectomy increases your risk of prolapse. And if the reason you had that surgery was because of uterine prolapse, it increases it even more. And that's never shared with anybody. And people are then experiencing incontinence and other forms of prolapse after hysterectomy and thinking, oh my gosh, this is, I thought I was done with this, right? So
exactly.
Yeah, hysterectomy is so, so common and a huge, I'm actually putting together a webinar on it to understand the various, because there's many different types, many different surgical approaches.
Yeah.
But I really want people to do some investigation into root causes first. And there's no shame in having surgery. I remember when I was going through perimenopause, not knowing the term adenomyosis, not understanding hormones and why I was bleeding so heavily all the time. And yeah, hysterectomy was offered to me, but I in my gut, I knew it wasn't, and I knew the risks of, from a pelvic health perspective as well, but I knew that it can't just be, oh, just take your uterus out. Why am I bleeding so heavily? I needed to understand why. And that is something that's not in our mainstream medical system, the way it's put up, you know, the way it's organized now. Unfortunately, they wait for there to be a disease state for them to fix rather than looking at why
prevention
is it
or why.
Prevention. Exactly. Yeah. So, and the post-op postpartum, it's not even just hysterectomy. It's really any pelvic surgery. I mean, it could be any surgery arguably, but we're focusing on the pelvis here. And so I went through a pelvic surgery. I had a stage 2 rectocele and did all the things, lived with it for 9 years, wasn't moving the needle, approaching menopause. And I said, this is the time for me to do this. I want to do this now. And so I went through that process and said, really, a lot of what I was doing in terms of supporting my body was I was preparing for the event, putting my body in the best state possible, working on the nervous system, working on the muscles, working on, you know, preparing for what my recovery is going to be like, making sure I had all the things I needed, the support system, all that stuff, and go through it, go through the recovery. And I said, this is really what I counsel a lot of women to do during pregnancy to prepare for their postpartum and what they're doing from our postpartum recovery perspective. So there's really a lot of overlap that I saw going through that experience myself.
Yeah.
And recognize there's already not a lot of information about pelvic health, and there's definitely not a lot of information about pelvic health as it pertains to surgery. There's so many women going, as we talked about hysterectomy, but so many other pelvic floor surgeries are happening for incontinence, for prolapse. And again, no shame in the surgery. I just want people to be informed as to what are the things that contributed to that happening
in the first
place.
And
how can we mitigate that the likelihood of them happening again? Like the recurrence rate with pelvic surgery is so high. And I think a big piece of that is no root cause investigation, no pelvic physio, no pelvic exercise. So many, like, people are told, oh, you don't need pelvic exercise anymore because I've just fixed the problem.
You're fixed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think actually, to a certain extent, that's the standard of care in many orthopedic surgeries as well.
Yep.
Like knee replacement. Oh, your arthritis is fixed now. You've got an artificial knee. And that person is functionally weaker when they leave the hospital because now they have extreme amounts of pain, inflammation, swelling, and now they bend less, they move less, and then they're fearing pain, and then that those symptoms just come back.
Yeah.
And so the pelvic surgery is the same. Yeah.
The difference with that, though, is those people who are having knee replacements or shoulder surgery are given a full recovery protocol with physio incorporated. And people who go through pelvic surgeries or give birth to babies are provided nothing.
Nothing. And there aren't any protocols that are clear-cut standards of post C-section, you do this at week 6. We're kind of, as pelvic physical therapists, as fitness professionals, we're figuring it out for ourselves. So maybe in 10, 50 years, there will be protocols, but you're exactly right. And surgery, there's no shame in surgery, but it is not the only thing that we need to do. It's that plus the rehab component, that plus lifestyle management, that plus nervous system management, right?
Yep.
So I love that. This is great for all of us who are aging, who are slowly getting older and, you know, thinking, you know what, I have a prolapse now. Will it get worse when I get older? How will I manage it if I get worse? And I love that you shared that, you know, 9 years, you put in the work and you decided, I'm going to go for this because this is what's best for me. No shame. This is just the decision that's going to work for you.
Yeah.
And that's also something very few people talk about openly. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. I felt shame for sure. I felt like a hypocrite. I felt like, how can I do this after I've been preaching all these things that are supposed to help you avoid surgery? So I struggled with it for 4 years, that decision. And I booked and canceled twice before I went forward with it. Part of that was investigating why am I bleeding and making sure I got a handle on all of that. But I definitely felt a lot of that, the shame that people feel. And then I looked at, and I was speaking with a woman who had had a tummy tuck procedure who also yes. works in this space. And we shared stories and she said, there are things that all the exercise and all the lifestyle approaches in the world simply not going to fix. And exactly. there sometimes surgery is the best option and that yeah. can help improve function for many people. So I sort of changed the lens that I was looking at it through and also looked at it now through the lens of so many people that I support who are afraid of talking about this with anybody, who are afraid of who feel like they've failed, who feel like they've taken the easy way out. No, absolutely not.
You're still putting in the hard work. You know, yeah. I'm working with a mom now who is a mom of twins with a huge diastasis and hernia. She just had a surgery and she already at like 8 weeks post-op, she's doing better.
Yeah.
And she's so happy she went through with it. So yeah. it's, you know, she put in the work, she strengthened, she did all that, but she still had a huge hernia yeah. and diastasis. So surgeries, I think it's the balance of like, that's one option. It's not yeah. the only option.
Yeah.
And there's no shame or, you know, I get how that would feel though, especially as a fitness pro, because you feel like, oh, I'm telling people to exercise and, you know, but I'm glad that there are people like you who are speaking openly about it. Hopefully mm-hmm. that helps reduce the stigma for people who are in the field and who are not in the field. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about some of the ways because you speak all over the place about these kinds of topics. I would love to know, as a pelvic physio myself, is how did you get about doing, go about doing more of the speaking stuff and advocacy around pelvic health?
Did you start
online? Did you progress to in person or did you always go in person?
It was, I think, like looking back, I started doing some in-person workshops. So way back in the day when I was in Ontario, I laid off and I thought, okay, let's see if I can do something and build a pelvic health business. I started an event called Kegels and Cocktails. And that was, I wanted to make an event to draw people together, to have conversation, to have speakers, to be educated, but I didn't want it to be clinical and
boring.
Stiff. All yeah. the things that we associate with really a lot of health education, but definitely pelvic health. So that was kind of the first thing. And it wasn't, like I said, I brought guest speakers in. I still always have a pelvic physio at those events because I believe so wholeheartedly in that profession and what you do. And so that I think was maybe kind of the gateway. And then I did webinars and in-person workshops here and there. And then it just, you know, random places would just ask me to come and speak about something. Can you come and speak to a group? You know, it was a lot of women's networking groups that would have somebody have guest speakers come in. So it was that. And so I didn't necessarily go out looking for it. It mm-hmm. just kind of happened.
It evolved. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the events that I speak at are geared to, like, sometimes they're retreats and they are weekend retreats that are focused on health and reconnection and all that kind of stuff. So I've been guest speakers at retreats. And now this week or next weekend, I'll be at a business and leadership conference. But that was actually kind of where the vagina coach came from. I was many years ago, I was invited to speak to it was called the Mompreneur organization at the time. And I was a member of that group. And I wrote this blog post, said how optimizing your pelvic health can make you a better mompreneur. And they loved that article. And they said, we want you to come and speak at our national conference. And so I was one of the speakers and all of the speakers were some sort of business coach. And here I come up on stage talking about pelvic floor. And I've got these big signs up with, you know, giant vulvas and anatomy on the screen. And I joked and I said, well, now you have a vagina coach for your business. And it was a total joke. It just came out of nowhere, but it was like this light bulb because I had been known as the fitness doula beforehand.
Oh,
I was a personal trainer. I still am. And I, because I was working primarily with pregnant women and new moms, I trained as a doula as well and combined those. So that was kind of my handle. And then as I started to transition into this perimenopause, menopause space, doula wasn't so, didn't resonate so much. So I knew I needed a bit of a shift. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to step into this really uncomfortable world or word and talk about what I'm so passionate about. And that's kind of where that started.
And that's so cool.
Yeah. So now it's just random people just reach out and say, can you please come and do this? And I say yes most often because put me in front of a group of people who want to learn and I'll show up and tell you.
I agree. And I think that like we want to make pelvic health seem so commonplace and so easy to say the word vagina, say the word vulva. So there's not that icky feeling around it. Yep. We can say those words around the dinner table, like we're saying shoulder or knee, like that's a good thing. And I think just the fact that your handle is, you know, the vagina coach, like that itself is just people are saying those words. People are getting used to and getting comfortable seeing those as just words and not dirty words or, you know, always sexual words or anything related to stigma, right? Exactly. Thank you for sharing that. I love speaking and I love educating. And so this is something that I want to get into more and more. And last year I was invited to speak at a few events. And so I always like seeing how people go about, you know, becoming these well-known speakers who get to go and share their passion with everybody around them.
Yeah.
And you know what? I would argue too, that a lot of us health and wellness coaches, we are helping people in such a great way that I think that is more worthwhile in many ways than a business coach. Because if you feel good in your body, if you're not peeing your pants at a meeting, if you're going to public speak and you're not worried about, you know, farting exactly. without control, you're going to feel better in your body. Right.
Totally. So that was my whole talk right there. It was just like how this is such a distraction in your life and imagine how much more energy and confidence you will have in your business or any other aspect of your life if you're not worried about, can they smell? Can they hear? Am I leaking? Is there going to be a bathroom nearby? Like all the things.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Tell me a little bit about Hashimoto's because I think it's a word that not a lot of people know about, even though there's actually quite a lot of people who have Hashimoto's.
Mm-hmm. And don't know it. Yeah.
And don't know it.
I'd never heard of it before. And so in my... you know, going back where I had pelvian growing belly zinc and I started to bleed ridiculously heavily. I started to get really, really weird symptoms and everybody was like, oh, it's stress. And I was like,
of course, well,
I don't feel stressed, but yeah, I have two young children. I'm away from my family. My husband's away a lot. I'm trying to juggle these two businesses for sure. I've got a lot on my plate and I can totally attribute it to stress, but it just, I was like, I don't know. I don't think it's just,
it's
that.
Not just stress.
Yeah. Right. And so the bleeding heavily, I was like, I would go through a super plus tampon in about 20 minutes for usually a couple of days. Like I would be housebound. I couldn't do anything. And so I knew something like in my mind, I was like, I think my hormones are off. Like I knew something. And so I struggled with it for many years. And then when we moved back to Vancouver, we got a new doctor, you know, do all the things. And I went to my doctor and I said, you know, I'd like a hormone test. I started to kind of work with a naturopath, but it was still very much mainstream medical. And so I went to my doctor. I said, I would like a hormone test. And I have this test. I didn't even really know what to ask for. I just said hormone test. And she did a panel of a few things. And then it came back. She calls. She's like, I need you to come into the office. And I thought, oh, great. She sounds something. My hormones are off. And she said, no, your hormones are fine, but your ferritin's very low. And I said, well, yes, I like lose half my body weight in blood every month. Right. And so I was like, that was my kind of, again, another TSN turning point where I looked and I said, this is not going to serve me. I know this is not normal. And I started to do more investigation. So I started to read books. Dr. Sarah Gottfried was one of the first books called The Hormone Cure. That was kind of my first introduction to how the hormones work and what does it mean? And like, I'd never heard of the term perimenopause before. And a lot of the books I was reading have quizzes have hormone quizzes. Are you estrogen dominant? Are you low in progesterone? Are you, you know, all the things. And I would always end up ticking a lot of boxes in this hypothyroidism category. And again, I was like, thyroid, like, how does that come into play? So I started to dig more and learn more about thyroid. And then I started to hear this Hashimoto's piece and again, was ticking off all the boxes. And at this time I'd started to work with a naturopath and I went to her and I said, I would like this test, this Hashimoto's test. And I had that test and sure enough, I have all the antibodies are elevated. So many women are diagnosed with hypothyroidism, so low thyroid. And many women are diagnosed with that through the mainstream medical system with no additional testing. It's usually TSH and maybe T3, which is our active form of thyroid hormone. And then if that TSH number is really high, that actually means low thyroid. So they get put on thyroid medication, often just T3 medication. And so many women who are diagnosed, like I've heard statistics of in the 90s from the majority of sources that I follow, 90-ish percent of women diagnosed with hypothyroidism actually have Hashimoto's, but the mainstream medical does not test for the ant, doesn't do a full thyroid panel. So many women go on this thyroid medication and they're like, well, you know, maybe I feel a little better, but they don't really feel better. And sometimes will feel worse. And a lot of it is because that's not the root. That's not what's happening. You actually have an autoimmune condition called Hashimoto's. So Hashimoto's, hypothyroidism, and symptoms of perimenopause, you could put those three lists together of common symptoms and they look identical.
There's so much overlap. Yes.
Totally. So what is it, just perimenopause? Is it hypothyroidism? Is it Hashimoto? So one thing I started to recommend every woman do is see a pelvic physio, do a full thought. Well, I've been recommending that for a long time, but
I was going to say, I love your sign.
Yeah.
For those of you listening to this, it says pelvic floor physio, just do it. I need that sign. It's amazing.
Yeah. So that was always on my list, but then it started to do a full thyroid panel and do hormone testing if you can. And the full thyroid panel is TSH, T3, T4, reverse T3, TPO, which is an antibody, and TGA or TGAB, which are the last two are antibodies. If you aren't testing
those- Can you
get
this with your doctor though? Like your medical doctor?
You probably have to pay privately.
Okay.
So you could, like I'm in BC, I can, yes, go to my medical doctor and ask for that, but I need to pay for that test.
Okay.
It's not just randomly covered for anybody to go through. They'll TSH, yes, T3, yes, but the other ones, no, I have to pay. But without that knowledge, you want to understand, is it truly hypothyroidism or is it Hashimoto's? And the majority of women will fall in the Hashimoto's category, which is autoimmune. And another symptom that I had that I'd never had before in my life was constipation. And of course, being in pelvic health, I know how damaging constipation is. And I know that was a big trigger for the development of my Rectisil. So doing all these things, thinking I'm doing all the right things. I exercise, drink water, eat high fiber, and la, 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 all the things. And I can't poop properly. And
doing all those things.
Totally. And so all of the weird symptoms I had, anxiety, heart palpitations, weird skin rashes, not sleeping well, poor tolerance for exercise, getting sick very frequently, constipation, which I mentioned, those are all very common with perimenopause, with hypothyroidism, with Hashimoto's. So you have to understand, you have to do the full thyroid panel at least once and understand if you have autoimmunity or true hypothyroidism. And that was, you know, understanding that about my body, then I could make the changes that all of a sudden everything started to normalize. All these
interesting
weird things that I'd had been struggling with for years started to
normalize. Is it a medication like that for Hashimoto's or is it more if it's autoimmune, like basically
diet is a big one.
Nutrition, diet.
So gluten is usually a big one for Hashimoto's. So I removed gluten. I did all the things, like remove all anything that was inflammatory in my body because autoimmunity creates inflammation. And so I took out gluten, dairy, and eggs for me at the time. I'm now back where I have dairy and eggs and I do tolerate gluten fine every now and then, but that's a big piece is the nutrition component, optimizing sleep, reducing stress, all of that. And my antibodies were starting to come down. I took out caffeine. I took out alcohol was the last one where I've never been a big drinker. And I was like, you know, I have a glass of wine or two a week, maybe. And I thought it can't be, but as soon as I stopped alcohol completely, it was life-changing. It was life-changing. So it was kind of a series of a lot of things, bioidentical, progesterone. I started on that. I was doing some Chinese herbs. I was doing lots of things and my antibodies were starting to slowly come down. Then I, through research, found out about this medication called low dose naltrexone, which high dose naltrexone is for alcoholics and drug addicts. And on a low dose, it's used with autoimmunity, it's used with cancer, it's used for a lot of things. And this one thyroid person who I follow, I did a consult with her, and she works with a naturopath who also uses it in his practice. He's actually a blend between, he's a medical doctor and functional, so he's not even really a naturopath, I should say.
He calls, I think that's a cool combo, like the medical doctors that have that holistic perspective.
Totally, yeah. His handle is middle path medicine, which I love his name too. But anyway, they were talking about it, and I thought, okay, so I gave that a try, and it totally brought my antibodies down, and I felt really good. And I've come off. I'm actually due. I'm having a blood test again coming up to check. I've had a couple check of follow ups and I've stayed, you know, kind of in that remission, quote unquote, state.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was a huge, huge thing for me. And when I started to dig and understand how many women actually struggle with that, it was just another piece that I recommend that all women get baseline hormone testing, get a baseline full thyroid panel, and it can be totally life-changing and take that, get more of that root cause that we need.
Understand what you're actually treating instead of treating the wrong thing, right? Because from what you're describing, that makes sense why so many people who have low thyroid, they're on the medication, but they still have that lethargy. They're still having trouble with all the same things, but it's slightly better, right? It's not fully better. And stress is always going to impact every disease, every condition, but it's not just stress, right?
It's a component for sure. And a couple of my favorite resources for thyroid, Russ is awesome. And Dr. Amy Horniman of the Thyroid Fixer, they know the thyroid inside and out and highly, highly recommend people.
Awesome. I'm going to go follow them.
There. Yeah.
I have some questions for you just about yourself. Mm-hmm. I would love to learn a little bit about what you do as a business owner of multiple businesses, as a mom. For self-care, what are three simple things you do for yourself every day?
In the morning, I wake up before everybody else. So I have a nice quiet house. I do have one son who's out of the house now. He's away at university. So the house naturally is quieter a little bit without him here. But I do enjoy the time in the morning, just me, myself. And sometimes I read a book. Sometimes I look through Instagram. Sometimes I sit in front of a red light device. Sometimes I do I have a little like sauna blanket. So it just depends.
Switch it up, but have that quiet time. What did you do? Do you remember what you used to do when your kids were younger? Because this is what I want to know.
Yeah, like, same thing. I woke up early.
You did? Oh,
yeah.
This is like,
I've naturally always been an early bird. So and my kids were, sometimes they were, you know, sometimes I didn't have a lot of time because they were early birds too. They aren't anymore, but they would often wake up, you know, you'd have like 20 minutes and be like, oh, that's not enough. But I did. I woke up early. I've always been an early bird, so I feel fortunate for that.
Yeah, my kids are early birds and I'm a night owl. And so they're always up at 5:36. I mean, they're still young. They're 3 and, you know, almost 6. But I can't even imagine waking up before them because I stay up late. That's my me time. But then it doesn't help with sleep,
works.
Right?
So whatever works. Yeah. It's harder when they're younger for sure.
What else do you do? So you do your morning routine. What are a couple other things that you do for yourself during the day?
Hypopressives is kind of a non-negotiable for me. So usually that's in the morning after I've had a poop. And again, usually sometimes people are up now, but I do a 20-minute hypopressive practice.
And what is a hypopressive practice for those who don't know what that term is?
Yeah, hypopressives, the term means low pressure, hypopressive, sorry. And I randomly, probably 13 or 14 years ago, was doing who's talking about pelvic health on the internet. And I found this gal and she was doing this weird technique for prolapse and it was all in Spanish. So I couldn't really understand. But I found that she had some English content. So I reached out to her And her name was Kaisa Tuominen, and she was doing this technique called hypopressives, and it was helpful for prolapse. And I thought, well, I work in that field. And anyway, long story short, she eventually came to Canada and certified a bunch of us probably about maybe 11 or 12 years ago. I can't remember now. And it's an exercise technique that is a breath practice. It's a posture practice. Mm. And it involves within your breath cycle, something called an apnea, which is a breath hold. And during your apnea, you take like a false inspiration. You close off your glottis so you don't allow air to come in, but you expand your ribs as if you are going to take a breath in, and it changes the pressure inside and creates this sort of suction almost, or vacuum. And it's remarkable with prolapse. And I was able to reverse my own stage 2 uterine prolapse. I know many people who've moved the needle or reversed their usually bladder and uterine, rectocele, not so much. And yeah, it's been a life-changing technique. So it's like a non-negotiable for me. And there's, of course, the odd day I don't do it, but I'd say probably 5 days a week, I'm doing a hypopressive nice. Practice in the morning. And then I nice. have some breakfast, and then I do, usually depends on the day, but I'll either go out for a hike with my husband, or I do some resistance training, or it's been crappy weather here. So yeah, I have a bike.
Same.
I do a stationary bike sometimes, but
get some movement in,
do my exercise. And then I do my work for the day.
And hyperpressive sounds similar to some type of yogic mm-hmm. pranayama or breath techniques. And
Uddiyana Bandha, yeah.
Great to do in the morning. Right. Yep. You wake yourself up too. It's just like I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Tell me something that you're really passionate about right now. Could be work related or just something in your own personal life.
I'm actually really obsessed right now with blood sugar. So I'm always, even, you know, as I said, when I was young, I've always been obsessed and passionate about health and wellness. And I listen to a lot of different podcasts and influencers and biohackers and people talking about longevity, and I listen to all the things. And something that I don't think I've really paid attention to very much before is blood sugar. Cause I was sort of felt like, oh, it's for people who have diabetes. And
yeah, I'm not at risk, so I don't have to worry about it.
Right. Yeah. But more and more people talking about insulin resistance and what exactly that is, and pre-diabetes. And so it's been really interesting to again, look at it from a different lens of not just somebody who's diabetic, but just how are we handling blood sugar? And when I think about a lot of the clients that I work with talking about, you know, not pooping, or talking about their energy levels, talking about their sleep, talking about bladder pain, like diet always comes in there somehow. And, you know, I've talked about low inflammation and lowering inflammation with diet and that kind of thing, but there's also a blood sugar component in there. And the people who are frequently eating, the people who are eating a lot of carbohydrates, especially as we get to this perimenopause, menopause phase with weight gain and all that, it's an interesting time to understand different ways of managing blood sugar. So that's kind of my latest obsession.
Very cool. I also notice a lot of moms who don't eat for long periods of time, and then they eat everything in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
I did this for sure in postpartum. It was like, day's so busy. You've got 2 young kids. You're just go, go, go. You might have a smoothie maybe. And then evening hits and I'm having my 3 meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner from 5 o'clock to, you know, midnight. Yeah. It's just not going to work for your body. Even if you don't have diabetes, you know, those sugar crashes, your body's trying to figure out what is going on. Your body's under stress. So
yeah,
I love it. That's something that I think we could all learn more about. If you could change one thing about the world, what would it be?
I'd like everyone to get along. I think I just,
is it really so hard?
I know. There's so much hate in the world, and it's devastating and it's heartbreaking. And I just wish we could all just be humans together and get along.
And see each other as humans, right?
Yeah.
Respect each other as humans.
Yeah.
Tell me about what do you think is your biggest mom strength?
I think I used to say one of my most proudest moments was I could get my kids to blow their nose. Like that was a win for me when they were younger. but I think my mom's strength is that my kids feel safe telling me anything. And I wanted to always make sure my kids knew that, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, you can tell me anything and I will listen and I will not judge and I will help you navigate it and we'll figure it out. So I feel grateful that they tell me everything. Well, almost everything.
Everything that they need to tell you.
Yeah, they're both like, my oldest is an adult. He's 19 and he can vote and he can drink alcohol. He can do all the things. And my youngest just turned 17 and, and I respect their privacy, but I know that if something really is important that they need to talk about, they will come to me, which I feel really proud about.
Which I was going to say, which means you've done a great job as a mom to hold that space, to have that non-judgmental space where they can actually trust you and trust that you will be there for them no matter what. That's what I'm trying to do with my little ones. And, you know, we're parenting so often in different ways than we were parented.
Yeah.
And I feel like as a business owner myself and as a mom, I'm learning from so much all the time. Mm-hmm. And at times it can feel overwhelming, but at times you're also like, oh, it's working. Like all that work that you're putting into the learning is actually working. Cause then you see your kid come home and tell you something and know that no matter what they tell you, you won't, you know, be upset at them or judge them for it. Right.
Totally.
Thank you, Kim, for spending your time with me today. For everyone who's listened to this podcast, I hope you enjoyed it. If you listen to this, share it with a friend, share it to your stories and tag us and let us know what you think. This is a really important episode, I think, for anyone who works in this pregnancy to perimenopause to menopause field, but also anybody with a uterus to help yourself feel empowered to advocate for yourself and your health, to not accept the simple answers if that's not actually working for your symptoms, and to feel like just because you feel this way now doesn't mean you're always going to feel this way. There's always help down the road. If you haven't found it yet, you will one day. Kim, how is the best way for people to connect with you?
Well, if you put Vagina Coach into Google, you'll find me on some platform. And most people reach out through Instagram, sometimes through Facebook, and my website's vaginacoach.com.
Amazing. Any new products, launches that you'd like to share?
Well, last year I launched a podcast as well. My podcast is called Between Two Lips, and hard to believe that it's been a year. But and I'm actually working with a new marketing partner, and I want to bring some products. It's not just going to be another supplement line, but a few things that are specific to pelvic health and women's health that I think can support people's health and longevity. And so working on developing that right now too.
That's very cool. You have a very creative brain. And I'm excited to see what is in store. This podcast will probably come out in the next, I want to say, month or so. So for those of you listening, sometime late February, early March. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Mom Strength and being part of this important conversation. Check out the show notes for more info and links, and we'll chat again real soon.